Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, host for today's episode of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce and Amazon, founder of Marknology. Super excited for today's guests. Before we get started, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Carlos, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? Bucket list checked. It's official.
I love it. It's official. We've got the wizard on the show. Once I heard you nicknamed the wizard by some of the guys in our space, I was like, oh yeah, I'm holding on to that. That's can you tell a story? How'd you get that nickname? Was it self-made? I mean, I have some of my own that I come up with, but like, was that handed to you? How did you get the wizard?
No, it's a fluke. Which I'm sure we'll talk about, but I have a meetup group, which grew into the largest Amazon seller community in the world. And on meetup.com, it's called South Florida FBA Amazon Sellers. And when you're referring to somebody in the group, you're like, what's up, South Florida FBA seller? Or, you know what I mean? Like it didn't flow. So then we needed to come up with a name. And I was at my wife and I's, I'd say closest couple friend, and we're floating names out there, and then I'm checking like GoDaddy as like my quick, is it available as a .com? Mm-hmm. And I just said, like, I don't know, Dungeon and Dragons days of mine from the past, you know, come back in, and I'm like, Wizards, Dungeon Journal, Wizards of Amazon. And I'm like, it's not going to be available. So I grabbed it. And then I thought it was too juvenile. Like, we're in a business space, plus I have an agency, plus I sell. It's like this weird mix. Mm-hmm. And I asked my friends and they loved it. They were like, if the .com's available, you have to do that. You'd be insane not to. So
these are your Dungeons and Dragons friends, or are these your business friends?
These are my business friends.
Okay.
And it was just Wizards of Amazon. And then since I started the group and started the name, that started. It's like, oh, that's the wizard, Wizards of Amazon. So
I love it. I love it. Yeah. It's easy for me to remember. I think it's going to be easy for anyone to remember. So that's all a name's supposed to do, you know? Bring recognition. Let's start off a little bit about your story. I've been on your show. Again, thanks for having me on. I was bucket list of mine as well. Once I met you, I'm like, I'm going to connect with this guy. I'm going to make him my friend. So I'm in the middle of that. But let's get started. How did you, before you got into the community and an agency and, you know, being one of the biggest sellers on Amazon, where did it all start? Let's start with your entrepreneur start, even before Amazon, if possible. Like, you know, give me a little bit of your background from school to where we're at.
Yeah, school's easy. Dropped out of elementary school.
Okay.
Walked out, had a, you know, dysfunctional family, I guess. I was dysfunctional family. I walked out of elementary and I walked into a local like drugstore or something. We're called Eckerd Drugs for anyone that's like down in South. Yeah. So they're not around anymore, but it was Eckerd Drugs. I walked in there, no money, walked out with a fishing pole and line and those like purple glitter reflective worms. And I walked to a golf course, jumped the rocks, and decided I was going to go fishing. No idea why, but I did. And
you knew how to, like, in elementary school, you know, no, how to bass fish?
No, I didn't know anything. I sat okay. there, like, okay. I think the hook kept falling off because I didn't even know how to tie it.
Okay.
But the thing is, I wasn't in school. And
you were Tom Sawyer. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, but your parents drop you off at school at that age. So I walked to class and was waiting there. And then I don't know what it was. And I'm just like, I'm leaving. But I left my backpack. So imagine the teachers and the parents. They're like, well, he was here. His backpack's here, but he's not here. And it's like panic mode. So they're searching everywhere. And I just get fined. It's easy to spot, you know, elementary school kid in the middle of school hours, just walking along the side of the road within a couple blocks of his school.
With a fishing pole.
With a fishing pole. So they
a stolen fishing pole.
Yes. And they, you know, they connect me with my parents. Parents are mad, but not as mad as parents probably should be. Mm-hmm. And I figured they weren't mad enough, and I didn't get scared enough to not do this again. I think like the very next day I did it again. Never showed up for fifth grade. Sixth grade, they somehow passed me. I don't think they were allowed to like fail you back then or something.
They just passed. They lost out on money for sure.
Yeah, like they passed me. And then I just don't go back. I wind up getting my GED.
Okay.
And just that period of time from like elementary school to, let's call it my very early 30s, was just a going nowhere fast, a like recipe for disaster, doing everything wrong imaginable. And
what were some of the jobs you worked during that time?
Oh, God. Any odd job I'd get hired on, no job for a while, as long as people kept enabling me, selling weed, like just blow pops, flipping stuff if I could, mowing lawns, just stuff like that. I think I was too focused. Like I always thought about starting businesses and doing stuff, but I always thought about that bigger business I would start. And I didn't focus enough on like those smaller businesses I could do to pivot into them.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself in my early 30s, GED. I'm working as a dairy clerk in Publix, delivering subs, selling cigars at the cigar spot, and then any odd job I can, expensive ex-girlfriend. And my, you know, friends, they all now have these like 401k jobs and benefits, and I don't. I'm this like tattooed freak. Who works the dairy and who's constantly hustling on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So in one of those moments on trying to get something for my expensive ex-girlfriend, I discovered eBay. And this is, I don't know, I feel like this is like 19 years ago.
Okay.
Something like that. And I immediately hooked on the process. So I found some random thing around the house, listed it, sold, got paid, got a review, communicated with some random person I never met, felt very empowering. Mm-hmm. I felt very in control. Like I'm in control of this. I list stuff, I sell.
I choose what I sell it for. I'm accepting the offer, not selling the offer. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
And I felt like, you know, on eBay with auctions back then, they'd have those second chance offers.
Yep.
So I killed it in those second chance offers because I could sell. Like with the written word, I could sell. Like I could sell people on it and why it's good, and I can make them my friend. And I loved that. I really loved it. Probably not the best use of my time, but I loved it. And I find myself, you know, trying to scale eBay with random things around the house, things around the neighborhood, and friends and family are seeing like, wow, you know, this he's doing something now. I'm hearing entrepreneur, I'm hearing marketer, I'm hearing digital, blah blah blah, and keep in mind back then, now we're talking about between 15 and 19 years ago, we're talking about, this was not seen as a solid career choice.
Yeah. Back yeah. Then. Yeah.
This was seen as a hobbyist thing you do for like summer money. Right. So, you know, having a girlfriend or, you know, your significant other, and you were like an eBay seller, that was like, that didn't say.
There wasn't a lot of clout. There wasn't a lot of like bragging.
It wasn't financial stability.
Yeah.
You didn't see this person as like the responsible person that could raise my kids type of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I was very insecure with that as well, but I loved it. So kept doing it. And I ran out of things around the house. I ran out of things from my neighbors. I started exhausting garage sales, which is a thing.
Yep.
graduated to storage auctions. Loved that, like being able to talk to other people and being like, oh, so you're the furniture guy. So when I get an auction and it has furniture, I can just call you and like being You'll able to me. Create. The, yes. Yeah. So building that network, discovering early stages Alibaba back then. So like even then I'd go to like these garage sale people that I'm going to, and you could tell the career garage sellers, the ones that put like ticket prices on everything and everything's like super organized and they're there every Saturday. Mm-hmm. I would build a network of them and I'd be like, you want these blue jeans? If you buy 50 of them from me at this price, you don't have to pay me for X amount of weeks. And then I'd order from Alibaba and I was like supplying garage sellers. So I was always trying to like one up. And
that's the street, right? That's the hustle. That's the weed game. And yes. Like, I don't mind talking about that because like, I've had friends that are now successful. I tell them like you have some of them. I was like, seeing their organization, even on a small scale, is like, this is the same thing as real business. You actually learn just a little bit more relationships, a little bit more communication, you're just not doing anything that can scale, to that point. Sure. And some people don't want to scale that because then they get the eyes, but there's like a lot of those principles. I asked you kind of some of the details of what you worked because I was the same way. And I looked back on my past for a long time with like, I worked at Maristar Casino as a security guard. I worked as a painter at Certa Pro Painters. I was a landscaper in Hawaii for 3 years. I worked at t-shirt shops in Hawaii. And I wasn't completely covered in tattoos at that time, but I'm saying like I worked all these jobs. That was after my ex-wife, then I got the tattoos. But I worked all these jobs. So I knew how to work. I was a hard worker. I just hadn't found anything. I had a hard time working a job where I didn't respect the boss because he's a bad boss. I had a hard time working a job where I didn't agree with the way they're doing things. Like, we can do it better. Why wouldn't we want to do it better? I just couldn't. I would get stuck on that, almost like an OCD thing. Like, if we can do it better as a team, whether at the grocery store, why wouldn't we do it better? Why wouldn't we do it better? And a lot of people could see this as like jumping jobs or like not being stable or like whatever. But really, I think just born to be an entrepreneur and hadn't really found it yet or found something passionate enough to keep my attention for a long time. That was e-commerce for me. But okay, so keep going. So you're to the point now where you're on Alibaba, probably before the world even knows about it. You're ordering jeans and selling them to garage sellers who sell stuff for pennies anyway.
Yep.
A lot of times.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm getting like pallets of this stuff. And that wound up helping me later whenever I would deal with products that I bought and didn't sell, the way I thought it would sell. I had this network of people on my phone that I could just say, here's this thing I have, and I would never really be stuck with much.
Okay, it allowed you to take some risks.
Right, yeah, definitely. Products. Yeah, it's a network. Like having a network like that. I mean, getting into a storage auction is nuts. Like it's insane. If you get into a storage auction and three people in every industry, like anything you find there, you're going to be able to at least get your money back. Yeah, you could be more aggressive.
100%.
So I'm doing this. The most profitable thing I find happens to be Alibaba. And it winds up being like, it's an adult novelty product. I don't know what I could say on the show. Like,
okay. Yeah. You say whatever you want.
It's a cock ring. Like this guy, it's silicone, guy slides it on. It has a motor and a little nub like that. That's what it is. And I'm getting these things for like 8 cents a piece, selling them in a 2-pack for $20-something. And they're flying on eBay. And this was when, if you wanted high volume, you sold on eBay. That's back way back then. And I just couldn't get enough. Okay. I keep trying to flip and flip and flip and get this while keeping everything else going. And my friends and family see this and they're like, wow, this guy's not going to like OD or end up in prison for life. Like he's making something of himself. Like let's support this. And they pulled together $81,000 and loaned it to me. That's more money than I had seen that I ever thought I would see in my life. Definitely at one time.
That's cool.
And so that was like the most powerful time I had felt in my life. And it's important because what happens next is I take that money to Alibaba and I go buy more of those adult novelty toys. And my supplier tells me, yeah, we'll do it. It's going to take like 90 days. And I didn't understand lead times. Like, I thought a factory just like stocked everything and just waiting for orders. And I thought he wasn't taking me seriously. And I went to another source on Alibaba, and I was asking, and I found a guy named Usman Cisse. He's got it in stock. I sent him the money and he stole everything. This is before all these like safeties that are on Alibaba now, like, and ignorance. Like, he had a factory in Hong Kong. A simple Google search would have exposed this like completely. I didn't know. I sent it. He stole everything. And the only time I heard from him again is when he wanted to tell me like he needed more money or I was going to get hit with demurrage fees or something. Right. It was pretty wild. So I'm terrified, right? Not for being broke again, because
for disappointing everyone that believes.
Yes. Yes. I didn't want to stop hearing that. Like, I didn't want people that wanted to make extra money from their teaching job to stop coming to me and saying, what could I do to make blank? And I could get all creative and geek out on them right there. Like, I didn't want to not have that. So I didn't tell anybody. And I started trying to sell off the few possessions I had, like a Movado watch and, you know, my two snakes, a Burmese python, Colombian red-tailed boa. And I'm in the reptile shop with these two snakes trying to sell them, or waiting in line to sell them. And the person in front of me is paying $25 for 50 worms, live worms, to feed his like his monitor or something. And I just had this only tears in my eyes, desperation moment. And I'm like, I'll dig all day. Like you just said, like, I'm a really hard worker, like real hard, and sun up to sundown or more. And I left with the pillowcases in hand. I left back to my car, like mind spinning. And I'm like, where do worms live? Like, where do I dig? And I see a public library, smartphone in hand even, but I just like wander in there. I find an article by a zoologist saying that herpetology department could save money breeding insects and feeding them to their reptiles instead of paying top dollar on the private market. And I'm like what? Like, what do they do? They eat and they mate? Like, what? How hard can that be, right? So I immediately go to like a bin store. I can't afford the bins because I want to create this like habitat that these things can breed in. I couldn't afford the bins. Bins are actually kind of expensive, like these bins, these containers. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't afford it. I said, what do I know? I know garage sales. So I go to these garage sales and I'm like, everybody carries their stuff out in these bins, but they never want to sell the bins. It's just to carry the stuff out. And I just went in there and started buying everybody's bins, making these bins, creating these habitats and breeding live insects in my home and selling them
to the pet
store. eBay. Yeah. Okay. On eBay, not even okay. The stores. Like I didn't know what I had for a long time. And, you know, ex-girlfriend, that's enough, you know, juvenile eBay/Amazon seller.
Now he's growing bugs.
He's growing bugs in the house. Like, forget it. It's like a labyrinth. Fast forward like 8 months. And I'm just like living and breathing. This code enforcement knocks on my door. At this point, I'm at probably 4 million roaches, 3 to 4 million crickets, 3 to 4 million feeder worms, 3 to 4 million super worms, and breeding them in these labyrinths in the house. Smells really bad. I'm killing my lungs because I don't realize at this time that their microscopic poop
goes
poison in the air. Yes. And I'm breathing it. I'm sleeping it. I'm doing all that. I don't realize it. They tell me I got to throw everything out. I bluff them. And I'm like, I think it would be an agricultural disaster. Like, if you want me to do that, I'll do it. So I don't know if it was true or not, but they give me until the next day. I have a friend who'd been like trying to have me go half with him on a warehouse. And now I'm selling 1,000 at this time. I'm selling 1,000 worms for like $55, you know, shipping, but the shipping's really not that expensive. You're going USPS priority mail. It's nice. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. So I wind up getting the whole warehouse. Like, nobody wants to share a warehouse with that, like the insect guy, right? And fast forward another 10 months, I'm living in the warehouse. I still have a home, but I'm living there because I'm not efficient in shipping out. I don't know how to hire. Like, I don't have any of these skills yet. All I'm doing is packing boxes and printing labels. So if I figured that the hour and a half it took me to commute, that was X amount of orders, I would just stay. So we fast forward about another 8 to 10 months, almost a year. And I'm about a year and a half, 2 years into this. And I get approached and wind up successfully exiting the business for $2.6 million. to one of the only insect farmers in the US. Like, horrible deal. Like, if you look back, like, I think it was a there was like no multiple. Like, everyone's talking about these crazy multiples, but the validation
for you
that it get, yeah, it just, you know, I was 8 feet tall and bulletproof immediately because somebody who knew what they were doing wanted to buy my stuff. And, you know, I got the money, which was nowhere near $2.6 million once everybody has their hands in it. And you're also ignorant of the process. And I think it was left with about $1 million. And I hoard around Miami just trying to, like, I'm single, I have money. I have the gift for gab. And somebody pulls me to the side. My dad actually pulls me to the side. And he's like, you know, if you keep doing this, you're going to be broke. I thought, again, ignorant, like, $1 million. You can live however you want, as hard as you want for the rest of your life with $1 million. It just shows how, like, out of touch. Right. And I did not want to be broke again. So the only thing in my life that I had, like, really done good and successfully was this. This is the thing that everybody asked me how to do. This is the thing that I did, and I created, I didn't even call them brands back then. I started things. I knew how to flip garage sale stuff. I guess what we call arbitrage now in the stores. I knew how to, like, contact people and resell their products wholesale. Like, I knew how to do all that then. And I'm like, well, that's what I'm doing. And I got in on beverage chilling devices. So I'm in there with, like, the closest thing to a corksicle. I'm in there with, you know, second person on Amazon with the whiskey stones. You know, these things you're getting for $2 and selling for $30. And then I just didn't stop. I kept creating brands. I kept creating wholesale accounts. And I just, to this day, just, you know, pedal to the metal.
I love this story, Carlos. Yeah.
That's it.
I got goosebumps. Just remembering the struggle, you know. I'm from the bottom as well. First to get a college degree, and my family left the college degree as soon as I got the job because I hated it. I was missionary parents grew up in Africa. That's where I saw scams. That's where I saw, you know, thieves, and, you know, saw the streets, so to speak. You know, my family made, I think, less than $30,000 a year for five. Here in the US is not, I mean, it's a lot better than a lot of places in the world. It's not a lot, in the US, you know? And, it was just like, I didn't feel like I knew any of these things. And, like, I used to be a server for $3 an hour. Like, imagine the imposter syndrome, you know, you have, especially, like, the pressure, as thought leaders in this space, if I can say that of myself as well as you, like, as people leading this space that were doing it first, that were, like, you know, figuring out the problems of around e-commerce and the strategies and, you know, how to flip stuff, how to make $1.10. There's a lot of, like, why doesn't everyone believe me? Why isn't everyone, like, you know, they don't understand. If I was a doctor or a lawyer or a security expert or a programmer, people, I can say that and people understand what I do. I'm trying to tell them I help brands on Amazon. And they're like, what? You know, it doesn't do well at a bar. You know, it doesn't do well at a bar. No one really cares. The same thing, like, you know, the family, you know, depending on you, not, you know, in my world, I'm a fourth generation preacher's kid. Being, like, of the cloth, so to speak, was, like, you know, everyone expected that. And it wasn't for me. Just like, you know, elementary school wasn't for you. This is kind of like, I didn't go to school till I was 16 years old. And then I just went 2 years in high school. So I got a degree, but I only went for 2 years coming back from Congo. Just talking about the similarities, you know, and to people listening to the show, I think it's a lot of times the people like us that come from nothing or that have struggled early on that end up being super outside the box, because you have to do whatever it takes to survive versus following this really, like, set in stone path to get there. Like, nothing against, you know, a law degree, but, like, you know, it's do this. Okay, now you're worth $150,000 a year. You know, and it's like, that is an amazing thing, but there's an exact plan to get there. And, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, depending on what industry you're in, we're not just an entrepreneur in any industry. We're in an industry that's literally growing and evolving every single day. So it's nothing that's been done before. You know, when you were setting up products on Amazon, whether it was like whiskey stones or whatever, the challenges there had never been done before. People hadn't, there probably wasn't someone out there saying, this is how you get a GS1 UPC. This is the difference between 1P and 3P. This is like, you know, how you fulfill all of those things. So you were literally learning everything, you know, for the first time and doing that. And I know now that you give a lot back to the community. This is amazing. Thank you for sharing your story. You're a great storyteller. And I just have so many questions, but I'm going to leave some of them there. So you know, you've got brands, you've got wholesale, you're known as one of the biggest sellers in the Amazon space. And as someone that obsesses about this space, that's a big deal to me. This has been my obsession for 9 straight years. So, you know, everything about this platform, is like, you know, this is the first thing that people came to me, just like you said, for advice, right? For, hey, Andrew's got his shit together. We're seeing it now. You know, I want what he has. Can he help me? I was never able to help anyone before. I never had any money. I never had knowledge that they didn't have. You know, so I was never in a place to be able to help anyone. So for me, this is way bigger than income or bottom dollar or anything like that. Not only have I helped my family, but I'm able to help brands, businesses, and people all the time. So forgive me for taking a couple of minutes, but I just think kind of sharing the details like that is what can really impact people that might be listening that are going through some of the same things or have hit some of those struggles or had 81,000 and lost it to something that wasn't your fault. That can make it even harder to get over. You know, sure, you had your part in it that you could have Googled or that you could have, like, you know, whatever. But at the same time, someone else stole it. Let's be honest, you know, and someone else has to live with that karma. I hope he pays it back in karma points. Okay, so you get the money issue solved. You get $1 million buyout. I know what that validation feels like because, you know, it, right now in the space, even having VCs and these private equity companies coming to trying to buy Marknology is validating. You know, it's like, oh, this thing I've built, you want it, huh? You think it's pretty dope, huh? Like, yeah, it is pretty dope, actually. I think it's pretty great. There's a validation to that once they put a dollar amount on it that you've believed in your head that, like, what you're doing is awesome. And then you get these other people in the outside world being like, hey, what you're doing is awesome. It's really, really empowering. And did give me a confidence to help me grow in a bunch of areas. But you've
it's
got
empowering.
The money. Yeah,
it's empowering. And it's also like you touched on something. You mentioned imposter syndrome, and it's like that never 100% goes away.
No,
like I know what I'm doing and I know a lot of people are impressed with what I do, but I'm like I give myself credit, but there's always, I'd say sometimes daily, you deal with that sort of imposter syndrome and you deal with it so you can move forward and you recognize it and for what it is, but it accumulates. And yes. then when someone wants to buy this thing you've done, it's like, it's total validation. It's like clean slate, start your imposter syndrome, you know, bank over again.
Bank
or something
over.
Like
yeah.
That.
You're like, yeah. Am I in so heavy? Am I in so deep? Am I, you know, playing this game? Yeah, man, it's crazy, at least for me. And I don't come from a business background either, but I did grow up with hustlers. And, you know, my dad was always trying to find ways to supplement our income overseas in Africa with side hustles. We were selling wood that had been already like cut down in the forest. You know, there it was all the time, these hustles. I want to talk about, like, OK, so once you get the money problem solved, let's say, like, the money problem in our lives, like even me, you know, money was a big not want need in my family. Like, it was a need, and like things like just health issues and, you know, stuff like that we needed money for that. We've solved for that. What comes next? Is this when the community was built, when you started building the community, you know, the agency, was that to help other people, or that was that for income? I know you do a whole lot of things, including like cars on the strip and Airbnbs and all types of stuff. Was that just to keep you busy? You know, tell me about some of the motivations behind those things.
Well, I feel like I'd be being untrue to myself if I didn't say the money, yeah, validation and getting a product and starting to sell, like, that didn't mean the money problems went away.
Yeah.
Like you grow, you have growing problems. Like the problems I had at, you know, selling a business for 2.6 are totally different problems. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm staring a gift horse in the mouth. Yeah. We did 169 million in gross sales. Like there is, I don't know, maybe I don't have the skill set, but there was a lot of money problems like to do that. So I don't think they ever fully go away. They just look different.
I agree with you on that, because there was a moment in 2019, which isn't that long ago, I had a $25,000 cash flow problem. I had, just for the listeners, I had like switched to a fractional CFO team, trying to get my agency a little bit more robust, a little bit more techie, a little bit more in the future. And they dropped the ball, and I will blame it on them. They switched me out three different times to like my bookkeeper CPA that I was working with. Stuff wasn't getting filed, double counted, payroll. They didn't tell me that payroll like now comes out a week earlier, and then on a holiday it comes out like 2 weeks earlier. So I had like 3 weeks of payroll go out to my team when I was expecting it over 3 weeks. It happened in 10 days all around the holiday. It was just a big mess. And I'd had my cash flow issues resolved for a long time. I used to have $20 problems, and now I'm having a $25,000 problem. It felt like the heaviest weight I had ever felt, you know? So I'm with you. The problems don't go away. They get bigger, they get badder, they get bigger, more heads, you know? But it's also like, I might be dealing with that, but I'm not dealing with like, I can't afford the dentist right now, you know? Sure, so yeah. Like, all right, I can buy plastic tubs if I want to try an idea. Like, you know, you're like, I can go to Home Depot and buy some tubs to build this thing. So yes, it's like some of those are removed, but the problems and the responsibility gets bigger.
Yes.
It was no issue for me to be a failure when no one expected me to do anything.
Right.
Right. Like it wasn't, it was just me out here in e-commerce doing my thing. If I failed, no one really even knew, because I had no one even knew about what I was, what I was doing, much less like, you know, so I'm with you.
Yeah. Like, and during those early days, if I totally failed, like if everything went bust, I would be happier. I don't know if you use profanity, like, but I'd be happy as a pig of shit under the bridge, working my computer on the next plan.
Yeah.
As long as I knew I was doing that. But when you get bigger, then it's like, it's not just you. It's all the people that are dependent on you for pay. It's, you could go under the bridge. You can't bring your kids and your wife. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And the dogs, what about like, so it seems like you lose some freedom. of your superpower or
your risk-taking ability.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yes, I know what you mean. So I felt like I had to say that though, because anybody knowing me, I usually talk open about that, and I don't want them to be like, oh yeah, I sold the business and it was just like smooth sailing on capital.
It's like, it's caring what people think. And then, you know, the responsibility, when you have a kid, for instance, like, you know, your selfishness levels should drop, like, you know, what you're thinking about, what you're caring about. You know, I've told people before, if I was married and had a kid, I don't think I'd be, you know, where I am today, because I like that dad role too much. You know, I just would give up a lot of working time to be a dad. And so I purposefully push that off because I want to do this thing, you know. But back to you. Okay. So this is your show. I need to know more details. You're launching brands. You're doing your thing. Are you having a lot of people come to you and ask you for help and building brands and wholesaling? Is that kind of where the agency came out of?
Yeah. So the agency starts after I've been selling for 7 years, I think 6 or 7 years. And it began as, I called it coaching. Like that's what I was hearing a lot, coaching.
Yeah.
So my now wife, you know, she'd be like, yeah, I mean, she's telling me every time someone comes to me and takes up 3 hours of my time for advice to grow their business, then it works. That's important. Like,
yeah,
it works. Like they're coming back and they're talking about the real changes in their life and their business. So, and you take 3 hours and my wife's like looking out for me. She's like, you need to charge for this. Like you got to charge for this. So like, okay, coaching. My problem with coaching, and I struggle with the word to this day, is when you're geeking out about something you love, but you're charging by the hour. Like I want to talk an hour on this one specific topic on the portent of A plus detail pages, but you want to talk about like six different things on the call. And I'm like, don't worry, let's just keep going. So I'm sort of like stealing from myself in that model. So coaching didn't work. And then I was like, well, you know what? I got to do an agency. So I started an agency offering what I think all new agencies offer. And that's everything. Anything you will pay me for, I will do. You need Google SEO? I got it. Done. You need you know, whatever ad you need Google Ads, we can do that. Like, you could just come to me with some platform that doesn't exist and say, I need to run ads on here and I have to have my return under blank. And I'll be like, I can do that. Just give me a day to work it out and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to get the people to do it. And as you know, that's a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I felt like I was going to stroke out every day. It was like poor quality of life. And then I just realized, you know, the things that I really do love, I do love SEO and creating, doing more for like search engine marketing, search engine optimization for the content that I like to create. So that was necessary and I love it. And then like my blood runs Amazon at times. So it's like, so it's Amazon and SEO, mostly just Amazon. And let me just focus on that. And then that was a big change. That was higher quality of life. I dealt with the, you'll hire me, let's do it. Just invoice automatically, not let me know more about you. So I went through, I think, the typical things that a rookie agency goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's, I feel like it's dialed in now. I never stopped selling and I just kept growing the agency with a focus on, you know, with a focus on Amazon and Google SEO. One of the, I never ran any ads. It was always very word of mouth, which I'm good at running ads, but it was also really nice to just constantly have people coming in via word of mouth. It was a way of knowing like, hey, you're doing something right. Cause if you stop getting clients, you know, so you're not providing the quality that you promised. But I had launched several brands on Amazon leveraging meetup.com. So like I launched a scuba brand and I just, you know, in some other state, and I just, you know, Google Earthed and Googled all the local scuba shops to that area. And I reached out to them and I'm like, listen, I want you to provide free scuba lessons. I'm paying you, but to these people that are here, you're providing free scuba lessons. And I'm going to use that to build my machine to sell my scuba products. So I was familiar with meetup.com and doing that. And I was like, well, what about if, I wonder if anyone's interested in talking about Amazon, and I love talking about it. This can be kind of like my day off, my having fun. And I'm not ignorant to the fact that if I lead with a lot of free value and you utilize it and it works, I'm going to be top of mind when you want to hire someone to do it.
Trust.
Yeah. Yeah. So I operate that way. So it's like, this works. And that's what happened. So I think we're now 5 years in on this meetup group. I think it's, you know, it's gotta be the most lucrative free meetup group I've ever created. And it's 16 events per month, which is like a divorce worthy amount. A lot of people ask like, what's the secret? Like, how do you do that? And I'm like, number one is your significant other is okay with it. Cause if she's not, it's not happening.
Well, she knows how much you love it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that unlocked a lot that I wasn't expecting. I'm going to say that, I mean, at this point, I'm 10 years as a seller. I feel like I've getting a little ego in a positive way. Like, I feel like a level of cockiness is good. So like, I have that.
That's why we're friends.
Yes.
I'm going on year 10. So, you know, I wasn't doing all the eBay building, but I've been on the Amazon platform 10 years and it is in the community space. Like, well, two things I'll say. One, I love the Amazon community because I was out here doing it by myself for so long. Now there's this community that's almost like the anonymous, like hacker open source type community where they just like to share. And like, I think it's more like that than most communities. And maybe it's these, because of the type of people in this community that have been in it a long time, they're more just open and helping. And, but that community piece, like, when it was just me on Upwork, you know, like I was just like going through emails that I was not meeting up with anyone. I remember the first time I met someone that knew an inkling of what I knew. And it was this girl that worked at Hallmark Cards and they were hiring I was looking for a part timer and they tried to hire me for six figures. I remember being offered like a little bit later, a six figure amount to be the Amazon guy at Hallmark Cards. And that, you know, turned me on. Not to take the job, but just like, what? Someone thinks I'm worth that? Are you kidding me? And then I literally talked to this girl for like 2 hours at coffee because she knew her shit. And I had just never met, much less a girl, much less anyone else, Just because when I went to school for computer science, I went with all dudes. There's no females there. You know, they're in marketing, but they're not in e-commerce. I meet this girl. It was just like rare for me. That wasn't even that long ago. And I just remember being like, it felt so good to share some of the difficulties of this platform with someone else that gets it. And super rewarding, you know, just super rewarding in those moments. So I can see how just running a group has been, you know, an amazing thing for you. I know some of my friends like from Gatita and stuff made it down there recently. I was trying to come down. I'll make it down there soon. Yeah, keep going. Okay, so the marketing agency, 10 years old. We still got some time here. We can go a little over if we want. So, yeah. Okay, you tell me if we have a hard stop. But so 10 years in the agency, can I ask some questions about that? Are you specifically like, because you are a guy that's like build brand from scratch or wholesaling and it went from coaching? I know that on that space, it seems like it's a lot more like entrepreneurial minded people trying to do that than it is like businesses and brands and manufacturers, right? That are like, let's create a product from scratch and get it from China and source it and create a brand. And that's right. Really more like someone that has a lucrative 9-to-5 that's trying to make a shift in their life type of people, in my opinion. Marknology is now working more so with like manufacturers and brands that are trying to like, you know, get on this platform in a big way and clean up their catalog and map pricing and resellers. Is yours a mix of that? Like, are you dealing with, you know, more brands now these days? What's kind of the pulse there?
It's a mix.
Okay.
It's a mix. And I'm going to say, I don't say that as to say, like, I feel like you have it more dialed in on the agency side than I do. I think maybe you've devoted more time to like, this is my baby. Mm-hmm. And why every single dollar that somebody gives me, I protect more than my own dollars if I'm working it. And I do give it a lot of love and it's my baby, but it's not, I feel like
it's not the one thing that changed your life. It's not the one thing that changed your life.
Exactly. It's not the one thing that changed my life. And as a matter of fact, even though it does really, really well, which I don't know what to compare it to, but say, I think the agency did a little under 2 million in sales last year. That's probably my smallest
endeavor.
Business of 51 businesses that I currently have. So like 50. It's 50. Yeah. 51.
That's awesome. And Carlos.
Yeah. So I still love it, but I have a mix. I have the meetup group. So I have the people that are just like, hey, look, what budget do I honestly need? Because on YouTube, somebody said, you know, $3,500, no, $300, and I could launch 5 products, you know, some insanity, right? Or like, how much do I really need? I want to start, you know, I'm working midnights at the airport. I want to leave in 4 months. And I could say, if that's the case, private label is not for you, you know, not 4 months. You're not going to receive your products yet. You know, so I still want to take those people in, and I'll take like a limited amount of those people in and grow with them. But then I also have, I'm set up in my SOPs and everything to deal with, you know, I do the environmentally friendly Clorox stuff. I do, Depends, Kleinerts. Like I do also work with some like much bigger brands. I can say, in case anyone's listening to this from those brands, I love them. I love working with them, but I have more fun with the other ones.
Yeah. This reminds you of the old days, right? My thing is that when it was just me, it was easy to work with those guys. Now I have a team. I'm trying to scale. I'm trying to build content. I'm trying to do podcasts. I'm trying to fly out to Miami and do meetups. I'm trying to go to New York and meet Gatita. I'm trying to be the CEO role, or at least like, you know, high-end sales role here as far as like building us, now that we're marketing and doing different things like that, trying to position the business bigger. I've got out of some of those things. I still stay very much involved in the advertising, so I keep my hands dirty. And once in a while, I'll coach somebody from start to wherever on the side for myself, just to keep doing it. But for the most part, like, I'm trying to hand off to my team. So those clients that really are like, you know, trying to do it on a shoestring budget, those are just not a great fit for keeping the doors open. You know, when you've got a team of 15 or 16, you got to kind of go with the clients that are going to be there for a minute. That's really the challenge. You know, so I'm always looking for whether it's a course, whether it's coaching, whether it's like a people trying to get into this space and be Amazon consultants or be an Amazon agency. Like, if you know of any sharp ones, send them my way, because, you know, I get quite a bit of inquiries like that and you want to give them to someone solid. But it's the same amount of work. If you're this big versus if you're this big, really to be successful on Amazon is almost the same amount of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Like, it doesn't matter if they're like really small or big, you know, you got to do the same things.
I feel like my niche, like my superpower for a while, and there wasn't a lot of them. Now I'm happy that I see a lot more people doing it this way. Like, I'm very white hat, with Amazon stuff. I'm very like, hey, look, this isn't like an Amazon world and a marketing world. Like, email marketing and digital marketing principles are even more powerful on Amazon if you utilize them. Don't look at them as two different things. Don't tell me you're launching something and the only thing you're dependent on is PPC, Amazon PPC. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing else going on. So I've personally, you can succeed that way, but I personally like to bring in a lot more than just that and create something with a lot more meat on the bone. And that's not a sexy thing to somebody that's like, hey, I just want to know what ManyChat rebate money back after the fact I can give to Game Amazon's algorithm to blank. And you could do it. Nothing wrong with that.
That's 10 years in.
Yeah. I've seen so many things change over the years that used to be like, this is what you must do. It used to be just get, 10 people on Fiverr to put you on a wish list and you were the top of page one.
Yep.
And then that changes and you can decide rise up or dig down and, come up with some other way to trick the algorithm. And that's just not my thing. Like, I don't want to do that.
I'm with you, Carlos. And anyone that knows Marknology knows that's the case here. Like, we're an Amazon advertising agency partner. We're trying to be legit in a space that's Wild West. I know all of those hacking things because, the black hat, because when I was on Upwork, I was working with whoever that wanted me to try whatever. And I did. And some of it was successful. Super URLs, giveaways. These things weren't even against terms of service yet. It's like, they came out with the laws after. That's what happens a lot of times with innovation. But I just started leaning in, and this has been a key to my success, is because no one believed in what I was doing anyway. I didn't come from an agency world. It wasn't my products. I was working for others. And the way I did it, I was service-based. I didn't have capital to start my own products. I was working for others. I was like, how do I not, if they got in trouble, guess who had to get them out of trouble? I did. Right? So I started being like, I don't want anyone getting in trouble. I don't want these accounts getting suspended. And as I started working with brands, like, I was as an e-commerce manager, I was at a medium-sized retailer. And, I was thinking like them versus like a hacker trying to like, flip stuff or like, game the system. And I used to be a gamer like way back when. I played lots of video games, like even
Call of Duty.
Well, before that, I was doing like Age of Empires and like Civilization and Sims and SimCity and just all the way back to DOS. I mean, I've been on computer. I'm not that old, but I've been on computers since DOS. My dad had me building computers when the
Carmen San Diego and the Oregon Trail.
Okay, and Tom Landry football and Commander Keen and the floppy disk games and all those Doom. But I do feel like my time there, like, helped me understand the Amazon algorithm and how you can gamify it a bit. Right. And how you can understand how this thing can work. And, it was a mixture of working with brands that would bring in a YouTuber that we paid $10K and he would bring in $100,000 in sales that made my mind switch. Or, I used to think of social media as, this is braggadocious. Why? Because I was insecure. Right. But once it became, I can grow my business on this, I got over that really quick. And I saw, YouTube make 100,000 in sales on Amazon. All of a sudden I had number one bestsellers with a YouTube, influencer. And my mind went crazy, just with like the possibilities. You're talking about using Meetup to launch a brand of scuba, and money makes.
I mean, I Meetup's there and then everyone's like scrambling for reviews. I'm here using Yelp.
Yes.
I'm using like Yelp and Foursquare to find people, and I'm finding the ones that leave six paragraphs on a French press. I'm like, that's who I want reviewing my French press, not, someone that received it for free and said, great product, love it. And then the disclaimer of receiving it for free is twice as long as the review.
Right.
Like, that's not what I want. So yeah, thinking outside the box and that marketing mindset, I feel like that's That's a lot.
It's genius. And it's what's really set Marknology ahead is the holistic thinking. So first it was focused on Amazon when no one was focusing on Amazon. That was our number one like thing I built a business on. Now it's the holistic thinking, like you're talking about, where how to use Amazon, the web and social media, or even your brick and mortar, how you work everything together. People will be talking about doing meetups. Oh, I use, you know, launching books. Okay. They're like, they have books. I'm like, put a flyer in their seat instead of the book with a code or whatever, have them go to Amazon and buy it and leave you a review. You know, like instead of putting a book in their seat that they might not even use, you know, so save money by the people that won't read it. The ones that do want it, we're going to go there and buy. And you've now used like your speaking events to launch your book. You know, just simple ideas like that. You're going to stuff like how can you use like the things you're doing in person? How can you use, you know, we're talking about using community and content to drive sales. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Like how can being outside the box, like Africa, for example, I always come back to this because I'm like the things I learned there about being outside the box, like growing insects, for example. Okay. Like that is so outside the box, like that, but that's what innovation and e-commerce needs. Like I tell the story of we were driving in Cameroon at night, like close to dark, into a village, like several hours away from where we lived, and the Jeep broke down. And there's no one to call. There's no AAA. There's no gas stations to pull over to. You're already in roads going like this with huge ditches and water and anthills. And you do not stay out in the bush at night. You do not stay out in the bush at night, especially with young kids. You literally get eaten. You can get eaten by ants, much less anything bigger, right? So my dad, he took the spare tire. A belt had broke on the Jeep, and my dad knows nothing about cars. He's not a mechanic. He's not, you know, he's Sheldon from Big Bang Theory more than anything. And he took strips of the spare tire, he cut them, and he used those as temporary timing belts, I think, is to get us into the next town. And I'm like, you know, and when you realize, like, whenever we break a cord in Africa, they would splice it, they would break it down, re-splice it with a new port for your laptop. There wasn't just, you didn't just go buy other stuff. You fixed it. You thought outside the box. You found a way to make things work. And I think that I've just taken that from those childhood days into like business because I had nobody telling me the way to do it anyway. So it was just like, however you get it done, you get it done. And that's the one advantage, I think, you know, with upbringings like ours, where you're just like have to be scrappy to make stuff work, it can really, really, you know, set you apart in that. And I guess, you know, I'm getting wordy, but I'm loving this combo. It's just bringing me down memory lane so much. And the white label stuff, like I was pushing SEO. I had no thought leadership. I was just a kid on Upwork, like managing these people's brands or whatever. But all these thought leaders in the space, like FBA giveaways and reviews and all these software sites that were putting out content, you know, we're talking about like SEO doesn't matter. And the brands I'm working with didn't care about SEO. And I was just like, the keywords matter. The keywords and the advertising like go hand in hand, you know, but there wasn't thought leaders in the space like saying this. Right at the beginning, if you remember in the past, like no one was saying that, it was just the giveaways. And I was just like, that's not the way to do it. That's not the way to do it. That's not the way to do it. But I didn't own my own products. I was working for other people. You know, my boss wasn't letting me do whatever I wanted to do to try. You know, it takes too much time to write listings like that or to do research. And here we are, you know, Marknology turns 7 in August. And SEO is one of the biggest things that we do, and keyword tracking and everything that's now a business, was something that whoever I talked to thought was crazy.
And well, you're doing great then, because I think we're getting to a spot like year or two where if you're not doing that,
you're gone.
You're irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't know that necessarily, you know, but I just believe like, look, if Amazon is a platform that's built for the customer, eBay is the opposite. So it's crazy that you transition, because one is like complete, you know, they're complete opposite platforms in the way they're built. But if Amazon's built for the customer, okay, and they're pushing brand, they're pushing international expansion, these are the things I can do to not get in trouble. How does their algorithm think? Okay, the algorithm thinks that conversion rate matters. So if I'm getting people there with the wrong keywords, even though my traffic's up, my sales are up, but my conversion rate's dropping, I'm kind of doing the opposite of what the algorithm wants. So let me switch that. Let me make a little change. Let me remove those keywords from advertising that were bringing sales, but were hurting my overall conversion rate. Or let me put a landing page in between my Facebook ads that are going to Amazon so I can qualify the traffic to make sure the traffic coming through is just, you know, highly converting, which impacts my conversion rate. How can I think like this machine wants? And as I've done that over the years, like, you know, 9 years of this, it's not rocket science, right? It's just, you know, understanding this platform and the challenges that come with it and leaning into that white hat. It really is leaning into that white hat. And that is not a popular thing. You know, a lot of people want money fast. And when you do it, you know, you talked about 4 months being private label. Maybe that's only when you get your product. The thing I say on every sales call is just like expectation. Like, we are not the team to come to for quick. We're not that we're slow. It's just like the way that we do things is over time. Right. It's right.
Yeah.
It's right.
Yeah. It's right. That's how it is. Like, that's, it's natural, and natural is what works best. Like, everything else draws red flags and bad signals. Like, yeah, it's right. It's the right thing to do.
And you got to come up with another genius hack like a couple months later, you know? So yeah. Like, spend your time. It's like the weed guy. Why don't you just figure out how to do a legit business, and then you won't have to like come up with all these ways to protect it and keep it a secret. You know, like, absolutely. I guess that's kind of how I think about it with the hacks. It's just like, you know, and that's where the blue collar work, the work ethic, I think pays off in this space. Is it's not a get rich quick. You can't, you know, when people say buy a turnkey FBA business, I wrinkle my brow a little bit, because I'm like, you might get handed something great, maybe, but you haven't learned anything and it's going to tank. You know, how are you going to learn to run it if you weren't there to help set it up or go through any of the challenges?
I 100% agree.
So 51 businesses, Carlos.
Yep.
People around here in Kansas City give me a lot of shit for having 6 or 7. That's why I knew I liked you, the wizard. And when I come to Miami, we're going to have to talk about some more of those. I know you do Airbnb, you do all types of stuff. I'm sure a lot of those are different e-commerce businesses and brands you've built as well. You know, let's end this chapter a little bit. Like, what is one of those businesses right now that's just, maybe it's a newer one that you've launched or something that's just really got your attention that you're having a lot of fun with?
What I'm having the most fun with business-wise, it ties into something we said earlier, is that meetup group, right? It's not a business. And we call ourselves Wizards of Amazon. I can't even trademark that. I deal with Amazon lawyers, right? And it turned into a business, though, as far as the amount of hours that goes into, you know, outreach for speakers and, you know, the you know, paywalls for people to access the video and the copy and thumbnails and like just all that stuff. It became a business, and I wasn't ready with my SOPs to deal with it. So it's been exciting. But okay. During the pandemic, like, one of my businesses is I have these dance studios, like, for adults to learn how to dance salsa and bachata and all this other stuff. And So during the pandemic, nobody was going, even in Miami, like, no one was coming to these classes to like hold another person and learn in close proximity how to dance salsa. So the location closest to my house for the brand, Salsa Kings is the brand, like, it's like $7,000 a month. So it's like, I'm not trying to hemorrhage that every month and we don't see the end of this. So we moved it to a location that's like $800 a month or something like that. Business is booming, obviously. You know, dance studios, as you would imagine, are not like...
I'm trading Amazon coaching for dance lessons right now.
Right, so absolutely.
You know. Okay.
So I decided, I'm like, one of my struggles is I'm always looking for a place to have my events. So I'd have the Saturdays of one of my dance studios, but it was missing a lot. Like, I can't do Google SEO.
Set up.
I can't. Yeah, it's a lot. So I said, I'm taking over the location. So I took it over. I assumed the lease, and we called it Wizards of Ecom, which thankfully was available, and it's going to allow me to tap into like everything else ecom related. I'm not really thinking courses. Like, I really like the model of provide a ton of value free. Like, whatever somebody's charging $10,000 for this in a course, I will teach this for free, and I can monetize on the back end. If you want to access the videos afterwards, fine. It's $30 a month.
When you want to partner with me on a deal, when you want to sell me your business, when you want to like use my fulfillment services, when you scale to agency level, then I'm here. It's more long game. So instead of getting paid on the front end, it's like, let me help you. When you're ready, I'm the guy.
Yeah, exactly. Or so like, that's what, whatever that comes with. Yeah, that's the model that's exciting me. So now we have, I have a 1700 square foot location. To the best of my knowledge, this doesn't exist. It's an e-commerce business that has a 1700 square foot location that you can learn online and in person if you're local. I ran the numbers and like I'm pretty blown away that it's an amazing model. Like, you know, looking at it now, it's got my attention. That voice technology with like Alexa and what voice is going to impact search and Amazon Live Video are like the three things that have my attention right now. So that model, that business is what's really getting my attention. I'm already looking for a spot to open up in Texas.
Hey, you should come to KC. I'll help you open it. I'll partner with you, be a satellite city. I could run the meetups if you just help me get it set up.
100%. Hey, man, I'm very interested. I definitely want to expand. I love the model.
I have the space.
To answer the question, that's what it is. And it did so much that we rebranded. So like I had the Wizards of Amazon podcast, and then we changed it to Wizards of Ecom, which you were on. I've never gone through a rebrand before. So like everything's changing and I'm learning. I like dealing with stuff I've not dealt with before because I'm learning and I'm getting to like reach out to somebody with that hungry, ignorant, like teach me, I'm a clean slate. Like, you know, download this into me. Like, I love that. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That would be the answer. Like, that's the thing that has my attention.
I love it. You know, I'm the same way. I'm someone that I've always focused on the long game. And I think that's paid off for me. More of a late bloomer, but like picking up speed, like a train, like a, you know, locomotive engine. And whether it's Amazon, whether it's like my real estate business, whether it's my own growth, you know, it's just been like, and I do all these things in between it to help me be patient. Like, so I don't kill it or smother it or like, you know, and it's things like doing multiple projects, you know, 6-7 businesses. What am I doing? Like, you know, when you're trying to learn how to do that and you don't have all these people in place that can run them for you, like you're sleeping in the warehouse, mentality, you know, like my sleeping in the warehouse was working 120 hour weeks at my day job and building this on the side, getting paid like $5 an hour because no one was paying anything for Amazon. And I was trying to learn it. I felt like I was getting paid to learn, you know, not getting paid $5 an hour. I love it. I love it, Carlos. I think I could talk to you all day. I know we're running up on time. We got to get just like a part two or a part three here going. I'd love to spend the time just talking to people about wholesale and some of the stuff you share in the groups that like, you know, we didn't get into the details of like, hey, how do you get started with a private label brand or a wholesale brand? I don't really talk about that too much myself on the podcast because I think it's so much work that if someone's not in there learning it themselves and just want to be told what to do, they're not going to get very far. But you know, speaking to some of those things can help people that are in it and just, you know, struggling. So we have to get you back on the show.
I would love, I mean, my wife hears this podcast in the car every time we're in the car all the time. So when I told her that I was going to be coming on the show, we had our son, like we were going to attempt to like, we were teaching my son 3.5 years old to say startup hustle. It doesn't sound anything like, yeah, I was going to like have him come say it to you or something, but like, yeah, I would love it, man. This is really exciting for me to be on it. If you ever feel like I can add value in the future and being back on, I would love it. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Let us know if we can, you know, a sponsor, any of your meetups or anything like that. Startup Hustle would be fun to do out there. Maybe we even do a live stream from one of the shows or something like that, you know, and I'm just kind of commentating on what's going on. I think we're two kindred spirits in regards to like, how can we provide value? And, you know, from my YouTube channel to this, I've never monetized anything. I'm not even selling courses. For me, it's been, I love e-commerce. I love building and creating things. And there's a lot of negative press or content around what we do, or there was for a long time. And I just wanted to like set the record straight and tell brands what they should be doing and how they should be doing it and how they should be thinking. And if anyone, you know, listens to any of my YouTubes, that's the heart I'm coming from. Is really just like, hey, man, I'm passionate in this space and not everything you hear out there is right. You know, so before we sign off for today's show, We've been talking e-commerce. We've been talking entrepreneurship. We've been talking community. But this show wouldn't be possible without our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Carlos, let's connect offline. I got some things to talk to you about, obviously. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show. One of the grandfathers of e-commerce and Amazon. Been here building brands since the beginning. You guys got to check out all of his stuff. I'm going to have him in the links of this episode, so you'll be able to see his LinkedIn, his website, his agency, a lot of what he has going on. Carlos, what's the best way to get in contact with you if someone's just wanting to reach out and maybe someone's in the Miami area and wants to come to a meetup? Like, you know, what's the best way to get in contact?
Everyone thinks I'm nuts for doing this, but like, you can text me. Don't call me because I'm not going to pick up. But like, 305-902-1283.
You're not crazy. That's a Gary Vee move, right? I think that's
just text me.
I love it.
Text me. Like, we don't have to get complicated. My email is like a million characters long. Like, text me. If you really want to connect to everything, just text me and just say, send me the link to the meetup. Like, whatever. Just, or ask a question, whatever. Say, I disagreed with you on the show or whatever. And I'll respond. We'll get on a call.
I love it, Carlos. A plus, as always. We'll talk soon. Startup Hustle family. See you later.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.